Blog Talk Radio.
Art Bell has gone to bed. Rush Limbaugh won't be awake for hours. You have arrived at the Commute Faster Energy Hour. Energy. There comes a time when all good men come to realize that that disturbing hacking cough is not caused from years of smoking because they never smoked a day in their life. No, we can thank big oil, coal, and nuclear waste for polluting the air we breathe and the water we drink. But now, bringing solutions to the monopoly-caused energy crisis. And coming to you from his remote location in exile, deep in a salt mine just outside Death Valley, kind of living out my own near-death experience, I'm your energy expert and host, Ken Rasmussen, occasionally called Late Night Leroy. Good afternoon, listeners. Today is March 13, Tuesday. It's noon here in California. And let me check a connection here before I go into my spiel. Is this Dr. Greer on the line?
Just a minute. I'll get Dr. Greer.
Okay, thank you.
Hello.
Dr. Greer?
Yep.
Yes. Okay, welcome to the show. This is Ken Rasmussen, the host of the Commute Faster Energy Hour. And we'll be going right into our guest here just after just a couple of quick comments that I have to make on previous shows. I just need to throw out a quick disclaimer that whenever I review any product, I am doing that for information purposes, and it's not an immediate endorsement of the product. It's just to let you know what new technologies are out there. And everyone is, of course, supposed to do your own due diligence in checking the products out, or if any investments are ever mentioned, that you make sure that it's a suitable investment for you. So, following that, let me go into our guest for today, and this is actually a very popular guest we've heard on many other larger talk shows than this. Dr. Stephen Greers from two organizations, SEAS and Disclosure Project, have been making major headway in trying to get known technologies brought out to the public. So, Dr. Greer, I want to thank you for joining me today on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, let me give you a starting question. Could you bring the few listeners I've got that are not familiar with you up to date? Just give me a brief synopsis on what the Disclosure Project is trying to do and what the SEAS organization is doing.
Well, SEAS, which is the Space Energy Access Systems, is a technology research and development group dealing with new energy and propulsion systems that was a outgrowth of our research for the Disclosure Project. DisclosureProject.org is the website for that, and DisclosureProject.org has dozens of military and intelligence officials whose testimony relates to either tracking or dealing directly with what the public have incorrectly called UFOs. This project began actually in the early 1990s, and we now have about 500 military and intelligence witnesses to these sorts of projects and events. The reason the two are connected, of course, is that there is no such thing as a UFO. It's an unidentified flying object. It's an acronym that was created after the intelligence community already knew that they were extraterrestrial vehicles, which is an ETV, which is what they're actually called in those circles, and began to study this along with very advanced energy and propulsion systems that were developed by humans, for example, the Biefeld-Brown effect and T. Townsend Brown's work, which was really going on before World War II, was potentiated by the study of energy and propulsion devices that were retrieved from extraterrestrial vehicles that had been acquired in the 30s and 40s. So what you find is a nexus here where there are some very classified operations that have been going on for more than 60 years that deal with advanced energy and propulsion systems, and that has been under the sort of urban myth of ufology. I point this out because most of the information on the UFO subject is, in my opinion, nonsense and disinformation of one form or another. However, at the core of it is a very important body of evidence, and that's what we've tried to assemble at disclosureproject.org, and that is that there are two categories of events happening. One are actual tracking and involvement with the extraterrestrial vehicles, which are advanced interstellar capable craft and civilizations that are behind that. The other are the so-called alien reproduction vehicles, or ARVs, that have been made by a consortium of companies that include Lockheed and Northrop and SAIC, Science Applications International Corporation, and E-Systems and a few other groups that have worked on developing airborne capable and actually space-capable craft using electrogravitic and anti-gravity systems that were really studied thoroughly in the 40s and 50s, and by the early 50s went deep black, as Nick Cook shows in his book, The Race to Zero Point. A lot of this was open source being discussed in the late 40s up through 1950-51, and about that time when they had serious breakthroughs in the actual ability to reproduce these sort of phenomenal speeds and resonance frequency related electrogravitic effects on aircraft that we were building in experimental systems, it went really deep black, and it has been unfortunately held in secrecy ever since. So disclosureproject.org is a group working to bring out the evidence and documents and firsthand military and corporate intelligence people who know about that. CSEES is an actual R&D effort where we're trying to identify scientists who have possibly been able to recreate those effects and, if ideally, would have an operational energy system or propulsion system that we could then put under an umbrella group to bring out to the public to begin to replace oil and gas and coal. This, by the way, is something that could have been done by the 1950s, probably by the early 50s, if not before then. And many people are shocked when I say that essentially all the use of oil and gas and coal that has happened since the mid part of the last century has been unnecessary. But of course, this speaks to the larger reason for the secrecy, in that it's when you talk about the proven oil and gas and coal assets that are owned by a relative handful of corporations and individuals around the world, we're talking about a $200 trillion asset base that somebody owns, and that's their piggy bank. And the good news is that the technologies are known, and we hope that they can be brought out sooner rather than later that can replace these earth-destroying fossil fuel dinosaur era, as it were, technologies. And the bad news is that there are some rather unpleasant people who are hell-bent on keeping this stuff secret and have actively suppressed this information, up to and including assassinations, threats, intimidation, and more frequently just simply buying out these sort of technologies and what I call black shelving them, and that is the acquisition of such a technology and then putting it on the black shelf so it doesn't get out to the public. This is not surprising. I mean, the world has always had cartels and financial and groups. It's just at this point in history, it's large and it's extremely powerful. And a lot of people think, oh, well, it's the government hiding this. In reality, the group that's really involved with this, I believe, is mainly privatized, corporate, transnational. Certainly has tentacles into the government and the military and intelligence community, but the real action is happening elsewhere. And I think that this is one of the real tragedies of the failure of democracy, and that is neither the fourth estate, meaning the media, nor the government of allegedly we the people, have saw fit to take on this issue, mainly because they think it's too big an issue to deal with.
Well, you're to be applauded and complimented for trying to bring the truth out on all topics. I did a special report myself a couple of nights ago on Men in Black, and I reviewed what numerous inventors have had to go through when not redesigning alien technology as such, but just brilliant ideas that they came up with and found how to break over unity.
Correct.
And as soon as anybody comes close to that, suddenly these Men in Black goons show up out of nowhere and either get violent or make violent threats, and suddenly it's like you say, it's black shelved and taken out of public eye.
Well, one
so,
of the things I think that we're doing is changing that dynamic. And one of the things anyone listening who knows of someone who may have such a technology, they should contact me as soon as possible at seizepower.com or at disclosureproject.org. And here's why. We sort of a beta tested our security system in the following way. Between 1993, when I started briefing President Clinton's CIA director on this problem, R. James Woolsey, and the year 2001, we developed a significant network of friendlies. And when I say friendlies, I mean people who are within these sort of circles who would like to see this information out. And they are a substantial group of folks that are still in a minority within this sort of policy group, but who do want to see it happen. And we got these first 110 military and intelligence witnesses to come forward about this sort of thing. And to this date, as of the date of this telephone call, not a single one of them have been intimidated. None of them have gotten a phone call saying, be quiet. None of them have been threatened. And we're talking folks that had the top secret SCI clearances, compartmented intelligence that dealt directly with these issues. And a lot of people say, well, how is that possible? I said it's because we have, first of all, a billion-watt spotlight on this issue and millions of people following our work. The second is that we have very powerful interests who have been in the classified world who want this problem solved. And the third is that there is a critical mass of people who came together to bring this out. Now, I think this same strategy can be replicated on the energy front. The problem, and this is a key thing, the problem is that most of these inventors who are not with Lockheed or are not with the MITRE Corporation or some of these guys, if they're out on their own and they come across this kind of phenomenon and they do their work and they're good engineers or they have an inspiration, they're working alone in their basement or their garage or maybe a small company, and they're obscure. And in that obscurity is your risk, because the folks who keep this stuff secret have their power because it's the darkness of secrecy. They do not want to step into a billion-watt spotlight, which is what we would bring to this instantly. Now, the tragedy is that most of these guys are gotten to by these, you know, Men in Black, these spooks and underworld figures. It's basically a mafia. Before they reach out to us. And so, for example, last week I had a conversation with the man who had developed such a system, and he was approached. At first he was, some threatening things were said, and then he was offered a huge amount of money to be bought out, and he sold out. Now, the tragedy there is, of course, for a few pieces of silver, he sold out the future of the Earth, its biosphere, world poverty, all these issues that could be addressed by having a totally new type of energy system running the planet. But what I'm saying to folks is that our group is offering to provide the strategic planning and the protection and the leadership to get these sort of things out there. What we have to do is find and locate folks who have this sort of knowledge, not just knowledge, but have operational systems, not just something drawn on the back of an envelope, but something that actually can be tested and shown to work, and get that into this sort of strategic pathway for both protection and disclosure and public knowledge. Because here's the thing. You know, if something's just known by a few people or even a few thousand people, it's easily made to disappear because it falls off the radar screen of our society. If there are millions or hundreds of millions of people who know about something, that makes it very difficult to make it go away. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. And this is an important strategic thing that most people don't think about. Most people think, oh, I'm going to keep this very confidential and secret, and I'm going to beat these guys at their game. Well, you're not. They own the night, they own secrecy, and they own those methods and procedures. What we own is disclosure and putting this stuff out to the public and getting a lot of support around it. Most inventors, however, get into and buy into this paranoid secrecy mindset, and they keep it in too small of a circle for too long, and that gives these folks an opportunity to make it go away. So the key here is getting the right elements put together. You need the, obviously, you need the engineer or the inventor who has something that is works and can be vetted properly. But you've got to put that and hook that into a strategy where you have a large network of people to support it and where they're working together. This is, those elements haven't yet come together, which is why we're still burning coal for 56% of our electricity in this country, which is absurd. I think that the problems of global warming, environmental degradation, the Middle East oil wars, all this kind of stuff, is simply going to get worse and worse and worse until a civilian leadership group gets together with these sort of technologists and inventors and begins to bring this information out to the public. And it has to be done in a very bold way. And I think that that's really what we're searching for. What CSE is searching for is someone who has both not only the technology and has something working, but also has the acumen to understand what the strategic plan needs to be. Many of these inventors we've talked to think, oh, well, I'm just going to slip it in through the back door into this widget or that, and no one's going to know about it. I got news for you. The guys that you've got to worry about who are your enemies are going to know everything you're doing in real time. The people who would support you and who would be the vanguard of your shield and protection, which is 99.9% of the public, they don't know. And they're the ones who need to be informed and brought into the loop, and that is your biggest protection. That's strategic security. And I want to talk about that because most people confuse tactical security with strategic security. Tactical security is when you're on a special mission and you've got a bodyguard and you've got, you know, security like that, site security, armed security, whatever it is. That's of limited value, actually, in this whole game. The big issue is strategic security, and strategic security consists of having the right people in the loop, the technology reproduced and redundant so that if the inventor disappears, it's still going to survive, having millions, if not hundreds of millions of people aware of the existence of it, and having very powerful people who are the friendlies who are in government and who are in the military and in the intelligence community and in industry on your side. And one of the things that I want to clear up, a lot of people think that, oh, well, everyone who's in a governmental position who's powerful is in this group keeping this stuff secret. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, my experience has been that when I've done briefings for the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency or the CIA director or a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, the reason I'm meeting with them is because they have an inkling this stuff is going on, but they've been denied access to these compartmented projects when they've made inquiries, and they know there's a rogue, illegal group dealing with it. Most of the people who are in government and in outside of government in industry would love to see a solution like this come about. However, most of the inventors think that everyone out there is their enemy. It isn't true. Most of them are not their enemy. The process, however, has devolved into this sort of paranoid game of cat and mouse where then the inventors and the technology holders play into that fear and make all the wrong steps. they play exactly into the secrecy because that's what this group does. They do things to intimidate people, and through fear, they then can control people's actions. What our group is saying, put that aside. We've put a system together and have a network together where we can put this sort of intimidation of fear to one side and move something quickly out to the right people and get it supported. Now, speed is an issue here because the longer something sits around in someone's laboratory or what have you, the more time there is for that thing to disappear or for the person, the inventor, to either be threatened or get cold feet or be bought out. I mean, and it's very difficult. I mean, you know, the average human being, if on the one hand you got Murder Incorporated coming after you, and on the other hand, the carrot, here comes the carrot, and you've got the stick and the carrot, and they're being offered, you know, $10 million or $50 million or $5 million, whatever their number might be, to sell out, they're going to take the carrot and leave the stick alone. We're telling people that they have to avoid the temptation of both the carrot and the stick, that there has to be another third way here. And the third way is for folks to come together, engage the strategic security plan, and get the right people in the loop quickly if the thing actually is a legitimate technology. Now, that's basically what we're aiming to do, and we know that this works because we did it with the Disclosure Project. And if people go to disclosureproject.org, they can get this 600-page book called Disclosure that has about 70 of these military and intelligence witnesses in there with their government documents, with their DD-214 discharge forms. And people go, how in the world could all these people come out with this information and live to tell the tale? I said, that's the strategic plan behind it. And, you know, we worked for 15 years to put that together, and we have that. And what I'm suggesting is that if there are people out there who do have technologies, they need to do this. And by the way, it needs to be done in a large way. It doesn't matter. It isn't going to help if there are 50 or 100 or even 10,000 people running their homes on an alternative energy system. It's going to have to be in the hundreds of millions to billions of people using it. Well, how do you do that? You have to think in a very different strategic way than how these technologies have been handled in the past. Otherwise, they just have sort of a small cult following within the alternative energy field, and they disappear. And this has happened. If you do an ethnography and study this issue all the way back to the turn of the last century, in 1900, you will find that there has been a set number of predictable mistakes and things that have happened that have ensured that these technologies get sequestered into a little cul-de-sac where they never become mainstreamed. And I think that this is one of the real problems, is that if we continue to not learn from that history, we're doomed to repeat it. And what Dr. Bearden and I have talked about is the fact that we have to look at what all the kind of games are that have been played that have ensured these technologies have been suppressed, bought out, what have you, and develop a strategy that accounts for that and is a new way, because otherwise you're just going to keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again, up to and including a conversation I had last week with an inventor that did exactly the same thing. He was threatened, then he was offered an inducement, he sold out, boom, it's gone. And so this happens all the time, and this is not a conspiracy theory. This can be proven, and there is dispositive proof that this is the modus operandi of this group. But the question is, it doesn't do any good because it becomes the tree that fell in the woods that nobody heard. It needs to be massively protected, disclosed, and then reproduced. And, you know, a lot of people get hung up on the financial issues and on the funding. That's about 10% of the problem. 80% of the problem is the strategic mindset, and it's a total different paradigm that has to be engaged in order to successfully get it's not just a new technology. It's a technology that threatens the core centralized power group that runs the planet. And, I mean, you're not going to do this using a traditional business plan with an MBA from Harvard and a law degree. That, you know, I don't care how much experience someone has with conventional technology, they will fail on this issue if they don't understand what the dynamics are out there and develop a plan to account for those dynamics.
Quite true. Very true. In speaking of defense of the paranoid inventor, several questions come to mind. You mentioned the necessity of having redundant copies of your invention. The garage inventor has usually invested every dime he has personally to make his one unit, and
right.
he doesn't have the bucks to go out and buy the hardware to make three or four extra copies. Okay, so you're saying that
I mean, my point is that where's the beef? If somebody's got something that actually works, it ought to be able to be tested, and then it ought to be able to be reproduced.
Yeah.
The reproduction of it, even if you wanted a one-off of copies, unless it's extremely esoteric, for $100,000 or $200,000, you could make usually a dozen of them, even on one-off basis. Unless it's extremely esoteric technology. It may not be commercially viable. But I think that that's something that we absolutely can do if the thing is actually in existence. But in the meanwhile, the details, the plans of it can be put in safe storage. It can be in the right hands. I mean, you know, we're working with people on my team who are incredibly supportive of this, who are former ministers of governments, who are well-known celebrities, for example. If anything happened that would try to suppress this thing, they'd be out there. So the main thing is that I think the inventors that are out there have reason to be paranoid if they make the same strategic mistakes all their brethren in the past have made, and that is keeping it small, not opening it up to the right circle of people, and sitting on it for too long. Yes, you should be paranoid, because here comes Murder Incorporated, and if you doubt it, go ask Stan Meyer's family. So I think that there isn't, okay, so there, you know, I'm not saying that there's not a reason to be paranoid, but there's a reason for it only in the sense that the strategy that's being used is incorrect. And so what my call and my message is if we can join together with the right people, the suppression of this information can't happen. And here's the other key point. Let's say you are the man who invented the widget X. And it works, and it's real. And you've got this positive proof that it works. If you are sitting on that, and you're the sole repository of that knowledge, you are a target. However, if that knowledge is replicated and made redundant and is in a strategic and security algorithm and protocol that makes sure that there are a key number of prime movers who have it, you're no longer a target. They don't care about you. See, they don't care about the personality. They care about suppressing the knowledge. Well, people, if you hold on to that knowledge, you become a target. Well, you have to de-target yourself, and this is what I'm talking about doing. I had the same conversation with a lieutenant colonel who's one of our military witnesses on this other subject. You know, he said, oh, my God, I never wanted to do this because, when I talked about it once, here came all these guys threatening me. I said, yes, but you were doing this alone by yourself. And there is real danger in being isolated trying to do this. There's real strength, and there's real power, and there's real security in plugging into a bigger network, and that's the core of my message to people who may have this sort of technology they're working on.
Let me emphasize one other aspect of the paranoia that all inventors have to go through. And we're dealing with this with an organization that I'm active in. I think you just learned about it recently, New Energy Congress, where we're trying to find new technologies and confirm their performance claims.
Right.
To pass them on to you to help you and others to help get the things out to the public. We've got one inventor that I actually did part of a show on last week who has apparently succeeded in getting the often theorized but never proven permanent magnet motor concept to actually work. And he disclosed on another show, and then I interviewed the host of that show, he disclosed that he had about 60 working units out there in the field now, getting time tested to prove its performance. But the problem is the guy is scared witless about possible loss of his technology if he even shows it to somebody to verify its performance. So now we're getting back to and I tend to agree with your argument that he's just got to do this in public. But how can he protect his unit? Because as we all know, anybody who gets a patent, well, as soon as it's published, then everybody runs out and steals it from you. So how can somebody protect their intellectual property? I guess that's my question to you.
Again, the key thing to that is strategic. It isn't tactical. For example, a lot of people say, well, the patent office will invoke Section 180, 181 of Title 35, which allows for a national security seizure of such a technology if you make certain claims, or will simply deny the patent. That may be true if you do it at the wrong time. You can do provisional patenting and protect it and leave out certain information, amend it later. The day that you amend it that put those claims in, you're at the National Press Club with 22 network cameras rolling, like we did with the Disclosure Project, and several hundred million people around the world watching. And that's when you announce that this is what you have. See, all of it is it's a strategic plan, and there is a certain counterintuitive knowledge of how to do that. It can be done, and it can be done where the intellectual property is protected, and it can be done where the people who have an interest are protected. But it can't be done the way these things are normally handled. It is a new type of strategy, and without it, they're doomed to fail because they will absolutely recreate the dynamics of the last 100 years where these technologies have come and gone and come and gone ad nauseum. Now, I think another key point here is that the testing of a device that is a legitimate device has to happen after the plans and the complete plans. Not most of these patents you look at, there's smoke and mirrors in it, and no one can recreate the effect by recreating the patent. But actual workable plans and schematics are in multiple safe storage areas. For example, let me give you a parallel again to Disclosure Project. When we had, like I said, about 110 hours of these military and intelligence guys' testimony on digital videotape. I had top secret government documents, some of which were not declassified. They were passed on to me, and they are not ones that have gone through the declassification project process. And I had these put in numerous safe storage areas and in the hands of key VIPs, and I'm talking about people who have been ambassadors, people who have been senior ministers in government, people in key places in the media. And if anything were to happen to me or the process, all that stuff would have hit the media and the internet with a dead man trigger. We call it a dead man trigger. So you don't sit on this stuff. See, this is the problem. I think the consciousness of that kind of, I'm going to sit on this and I'm going to be able to figure out a way to slip it out, and that strategy won't work. It simply will not work. And, that encourages the dynamic of secrecy and encourages the process of suppression, because now the inventor is the sole repository of that information. Well, I can't think of anything more dangerous than that. At the same time, you can have these things in the hands of folks who have non-disclosure agreements in place, who have and who are trusted to do this, and this is what we did. And, of course, there has to be a certain element of trust to do this. And I think that that's what our network developed, and this is why we succeeded in getting the kind of information we have out to millions of people without anyone being threatened and without anyone being harmed. I think that this strategy, as I mentioned, has been beta tested, and it works. That's just with testimony and the government documents. With an actual device, it can be done and would have actually more attention. I remember having a conversation with Ted Koppel of ABC News of Nightline about this issue some years ago. Of course, he recently retired, but he said, if you had one of these devices that had been vetted, and I said, well, before we would come to you, it would be in multiple, say, storage areas, and the plans would be. He says, well, I would love to have it on the show, and I would love to see that's possible. I said, well, we'll do it. And I've had similar discussions with the people at 60 Minutes at CBS. Now, a lot of people say, well, would they do it? I said, you bet they would do it. But it's got to be handled right. They're not going to just take your word for something operating in a black box. Similarly, I think that the technology that tends to get suppressed most aggressively are the ones that are the best. So that's why someone who has something that's, say, a self-running motor that's putting out multiple kilowatts of power, the last thing they should be doing is black-boxing that The last thing they should be doing is keeping the plans for it secret. The last thing they should be doing is, you know, keeping it in a small group of aficionados of new energy who know about it, but where it's not in prime time. I remember sitting, I was on a flight with a man who's a senior ranking member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee, and he had heard rumors that things like this do exist, but he didn't know. And he says, you know, I would love to see the dispositive proof that such a thing is positive, is possible, and I would invite you into our office to demonstrate, to put it, you know, to actually demonstrate it in front of the House Energy Committee so we could support it. Now, this guy is very sincere. He was not lying. He's not part of some cabal. There are good people out there who want to help these inventors and who want to help this effort, and we've met with them. We've got to connect a real operating machine that goes through the vetting process with this strategy. And I think when you see, when that happens, it'll happen very quickly because the network has been built. The network is there.
Yeah, let's go into security issues here. I had the, I don't know if you call it privilege or what, but the history that I worked inside Lockheed Skunk Works myself for about 11 years. The security training that they put us through before we could set foot in the workplace was extensive.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
When I started and years after leaving Lockheed, when I started working with a team I had assembled to try to get one new alternative energy working, I knew that I was keeping my nose clean and everybody that I contacted. But this is something that I think you'll agree with, is when an individual tries to start their own, shall we say, secret project, and the people that you have to share some of your workings with, when push comes to shove, you will find out later that you really didn't know that person.
Right.
And it's not always money.
Right.
It could be that they just have a big mouth.
Right.
And every time they sit down at a counter at a restaurant, they strike up a conversation with a complete stranger, and who knows what they leak. And I've had to come down hard on some of my team members who were brilliant individuals. They were ex-aerospace, but they were never black world.
Right.
They never had to work behind the black curtain, and even they, regardless of their brilliance, didn't quite understand how you have to keep secrets. So now let me jump to another individual I met who was in charge of, back in his military days, he was in charge of security for nuclear missile silos. I mean, that's about as high as a level as you can get. Very educational discussion I had with him. Anybody and everybody who touches or comes near that place, you had to get a complete background check. Now, let me tell you how background checks work. If you're applying for a job at, say, you want to go to work at Lockheed Skunk Works, you fill out this 18-page DOD clearance, and you have to list numerous friends. When DOD goes out to interview the friends that you listed, they really only ask your friends one question. Do you know anybody else who knows this person?
That's right. Yeah,
they don't interview your friends. They find out who your friends know that you know.
Right.
And they go two or three levels deep, extended from you, to find out your personal character. What Dr. Greer is pointing out here is that he's been involved in researching the security of the inventor here for several years, and he knows more professionals than any upstart inventor can possibly develop a network on. So as far as having backup copies, as far as protecting stuff, it looks like Dr. Greer has an excellent network established here for providing protection. Yeah.
It's very established, and it's very operational, by the way. I mean, this is not something that – I mean, it's operational right now. And that's what I think that if and I want to point out one other thing, is that our goal is not to do a replication of a secret project at Lockheed Skunk Works. Our goal is to do the 180
yeah.
degrees opposite of that. Because that's been done. I mean, no one's, you know, the other thing people need to understand real quickly, whatever you have has already been done at Skunk Works or at Northrop or at all these facilities,
mm-hmm.
and it was probably done before you were born. But as Ben Rich had said to us before he passed away, anything you can imagine, we've already done at Lockheed Skunk Works, and it would take an act of God to ever get it out to benefit humanity. Now, that's SEAS and the Disclosure Project is the opposite of that objective. That's been done. That's the paradigm of the 20th century. Now what people need to understand is that even folks within those circles are understanding that we're just flat out running out of time for that game, that there's not another 50 years that we can pretend like we can just keep things on the status quo with the oil situation and the biosphere situation and the geopolitical situation. I mean, I've said for years, long before you run out of the last barrel of oil and before the worst of the global warming consequences are manifest, you're going to have a geopolitical meltdown that will bring us to DEFCON 5. And I think that, which is nuclear launch level. And so I think that we're at the point where these technologies that are earth-saving and can save much of the problems that we're having around the world today and would allow us to extricate ourselves from the morass currently in the Middle East just have got to get out there. And yet I think the inventor does have reason to be concerned about shadowy groups of folks who would like to keep it secret. But I think that if they're isolated, they're at very great risk. But if they join with a network that can provide the strategic planning and security and exposure needed, that it's very doable now. I mean, and I think it is extremely achievable. And I think that there's support and protection coming from within what had been a hostile group, which is becoming friendly. And not all of them, and there's some certainly nasty rogue elements within that group. But I think that the dynamic is moving very much in this direction. I remember when a week or so before I briefed Clinton's first CIA director about all this back in 1993, I was told by two independent people with ties to this transnational policy group that keeps this sort of stuff secret, that about a third of that group wanted this information disclosed. I'm now told it's around half, maybe a little more. There are certain elements that are overseas, and I don't want to say which countries, that are extremely supportive of this information coming out. And I mean at the top levels of those governments, top levels of those governments. So I'm optimistic that this is achievable. I am pessimistic that it can be done so long as these inventors stay in a small network and try to do this in a very limited, closed group of folks. I think that thinking, while understandable from certain mindset of whether it's proprietary concerns or whether it's they think they're being safer by being secretive, in reality they're being very dangerous and reckless by being secretive. And that's a dynamic that needs to be discussed in great detail with these sorts of brilliant inventors and engineers. You know, I point out to people, I'm just a country doctor here in Virginia. I can't even hook up my DVD player. My wife has to do that. I'm no engineer. I mean, I'll just flat out say it. But what we do have is this sort of strategic planning and leadership, and that's what I think needs to be joined with these brilliant engineers and physicists and inventors who have discovered these wondrous, what I consider really wondrous and amazing scientific breakthroughs.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment here on secrecy. Anybody who visits my energy webpage quite often gets the impression right off the bat that I'm anti-government. That is not the case. I come down hard on government abuse on my website. I am disgusted with that.
Right.
New inventors quite often get accused of being scam artists just because they might have embellished the performance of their item. It might be just barely over unity, not a lot over unity, things like that. And immediately when something like that happens, the term scam artist comes out. Well, in my opinion, forcibly taking part of my income in income tax and then squandering it on garbage, that is a scam. And that's the government abuse that I come down on my site. But as far as secrecy, though, I want to get this point out. I do believe that a nation does need to keep their technological advancements classified and secret. I have no qualms with that. What I do have qualms with, and this is the next area I'd like to go into here, is this nation has had technologies for 50 years, for 100 years, that nobody can see on the shelf yet. And I'm speaking primarily of stuff that Nikola Tesla had working and operational before the turn of the century, and I don't mean 1999, I mean 1899. He had stuff working back then that you can't buy, you can't find in use anywhere.
Correct.
So, Dr. Greer, what advancement or progress have you made in trying to get some of Tesla's stuff out in the open?
Well, again, someone's going to – I'm not an engineer. That's not what I do. What I would say is that if somebody does have a replication of that works and that is self-running or is so-called over-unity or is accessing the quantum vacuum flux field or energy field, then from that point we could take it forward. Otherwise, the only thing we could do is try to find clean sources of funding to start an R&D lab and a fabricating facility and do it ourselves. But that we're not really, that's not what we're doing. That would be great if somebody came forward with those sort of funds. It would certainly take a few tens of millions of dollars to set up a first-rate lab and fabricating facility with full-time engineers working on all these things. And you would think that someone would want to do it. So far, there hasn't been. But what I think that is that if someone has replicated these breakthroughs, which I agree with you, have existed for over 100 years, then we would want to see them, evaluate them. We have institutes and folks who could test it and provide the proof that it's not snake oil or fraud, and take it forward with this strategic plan. So, yes, if there are people who have those sort of things, that would be wonderful. Now, if it's just a high-efficiency motor, no, because, there are already 90% efficiency motors out there. But I think that if it's something that is truly doing the magic, as it were, of this special area of science that deals with resonance frequencies and the quantum vacuum being accessed so that you get more energy out than is going in, and it's not violating the laws of thermodynamics, it's just accessing the ambient energy field that's around the object, which is a well-proven effect if anyone wants to care to look at the physics behind it. But if someone has something like that, then we could take it forward. But that's what we're doing, is trying to identify folks who have recreated that. And I think that there are some promising developments out there. We're still evaluating some of these to see if they pass muster.
Have you looked into a device that was, actually some clips of it showed up on Google Video by a gentleman by the name of Stephen Mark?
No.
Does that device ring a bell? Well, I guess I'm going to blow the lid on that today. He's been attacked by skeptics for whatever reason. Skeptics go a little overboard at times. If anyone would pick up a book on Tesla, of the few things that we do know about Tesla, this has been published, and it is out in the open. Look at all the patents that Tesla filed back in the year 1898.
Right.
And you will see a striking resemblance between that and what Stephen Mark is playing with, mm-hmm. with only a very slight modification. So to bring you up to speed on it, it's a modified kind of a toroidal coil, but it has an air core to it.
I have heard of this. Yeah, we have been trying to track this guy down and see if this thing can actually be evaluated, but we've never been able to locate.
Yeah.
Actually locate this person or the actual device.
Well, the video that showed up on the internet, there were several clips on there, and one of them, he was in, it looked like a conference room, and he was surrounded by men in suits, which, not the men in black problems, because as the camera panned around, I recognized one of the patent attorneys there.
Right.
That I had met on previous projects.
Right.
So if you want to find that individual, I can probably contact you later after the show and narrow it down there. But as near as I can tell,
we have seen this video. In fact, it was about several years ago that I got a copy of the video you're referring to. And then we tried to get hold of this person, and we got a cold trail and never got actually hold of the person, or and then someone else said that they had left and gone to the Philippines, and it was this whole crazy wild goose chase. So, you know, again, you know, a bit of video footage doesn't really get you anywhere, but if there's an actual, in the real world, device that can be measured and vetted, then that would be useful, certainly.
Well, but I'll just throw the bone out to any electronic inventors in the audience. Just research all the patents that Tesla did, because I forgot the name of it off the top of my head, and I sure don't have the patent number handy.
Yeah,
research all the patents. Yeah, but it was the year 8.
This one was like a toroidal donut-shaped device. Right, yeah, yeah.
But I have seen the patent myself, and I do remember that it was the year 1898. So go to it, guys. And that's probably 98% of Stephen Mark's invention is right there.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, go to it on that. The other item I want to dig into here before the end of the show is even in essentially conventional aspects, there are government obstacles out there that are outrageously annoying. There's a gentleman up in Utah by the name of Ty Robinson, who's been converting vehicles to run on hydrogen, which is basically still a conventional technology because he's just using hydrogen compressed in bottles. He doesn't have any exotic way of creating the hydrogen.
Right.
But he does know how to properly convert an engine so that valve seals and everything that may have problems with hydrogen suddenly work fine after his conversion.
Yeah, I know another gentleman like this also,
Yeah. Well, Ty has gone on record saying that he is unable to get a smog certificate in California because when they shove the sensor up the exhaust and it sees zero hydrocarbon pollutions, it kicks it back and rejects it and says, you didn't connect me right. He is unable to get a smog certificate in California. And then I learned something else from him this last week. He was also doing LPG gas conversions. Again, how conventional can you get? He cannot get a smog certificate in the state of Utah for apparently the same reason. What can we do to wake up these bureaucrats and align them with the politicians that are talking green, but when push comes to shove, you can't get a green vehicle out on the road?
Well, you can, but you can't just, you know, go down and get the, you know, your basic test and what have you. You've got to get your a very good lab to do the emissions testing. That is an independent EPA certified lab. Then you have a press conference and you say, here it is, here are the scientists who tested it, here's how it works. Now this is exactly what we did with disclosureproject.org. And then it creates such a focus in the public that if the bureaucrats don't allow the thing out, or if the patent office comes after you, or if Murder Incorporated, as I call it, threatens you, it would be a scandal. I mean, there would be people marching on Washington, burning the whole damn city down. So part of it is, again, strategic. You can't just treat something like this like a normal technology, because there are these barriers that are out there. You have to plug it into a strategy that pulls in the social, political, media, mass movement aspects of it, and that's what has to happen, because you cannot, none of these technologies are going to come out through a traditional technology development trajectory. If it was that easy, it would have been done 100 years ago. And so that's why I keep emphasizing the need for this sort of strategic plan, strategic security, bringing in large numbers of people into the loop, and large numbers of powerful people who are friendlies, and there are a lot of them out there, into the loop and into the support of whatever technological breakthrough you're talking about. I'll give you an example. There's a colonel that I'm working with who invented a way of putting a sort of electrostatic humidified air treatment system on the intake of a normal internal combustion engine. It cleaned up amazingly the tailpipe emissions and actually increased the miles per gallons by 20, 30, 40%. Now, this was 20 years ago.
Wow.
Got the thing patented. It was tested by the Department of Transportation and proven. It was tested by EPA-certified labs. He was working in his garage as a little guy. He had Murder Incorporated coming in. He had bomb threats. He had his prototype stolen. He had a car running on it stolen. He had put all of his savings into it, and there it sits. So, but you know what he said to me, he says, I was just a little guy doing this, and I thought if I went through and jumped through all the hoops and got the EPA certified results, and I got the. But he did what he. What was he missing? He was missing this large strategic network, this billion watt spotlight on it, and the ability to pull a lot of people from diverse parts of society into the support of it. And that's what has to be brought to bear on a technology that comes, or it's going to go the way of all flesh, like all the other ones in the last 100 years, and they're going to disappear. So that's what we're offering to do for something that's legitimate. Now, in order to get to that point, it has to be evaluated. It has to go through a testing process. You know, there was one man who said, oh, I have something like this, but it can't be tested anywhere. It has to remain in a black box, and no one can know how it works. Well, I said, well, how are you going to get a billion of these manufactured if no one knows how it works?
Yeah.
I mean, you want this thing to remain a secret, go talk to Lockheed Skunk Works and just give it to them because they'll keep it secret for you. I mean, our product, you see what I'm saying? It's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Again, it's all counterintuitive. If you really want to do something where it changes the dynamic, you've got to change the dynamic. And you cannot solve it from the consciousness of the problem that created it, is what Einstein said, and he was absolutely right. So in the case of any of these technologies, and in the case of this colonel, you know, he realized that never mind a free energy or an anti-gravity device or something that doubled or tripled fuel mileage, which is possible, I understand. This was something that just, you know, really was tinkering around the edges, but it was tinkering around the edges enough that they still went through this process of suppression, but he was an isolated person at the time who didn't have this kind of network. And I think that's what's really essential. I think it has to happen, and that's what SEAS and what my group is offering to do for anything that's a legitimate technology that's built and can be verified as being legitimate.
Well, the sad commentary on human nature is that perception is 99% of winning an argument.
That's absolutely.
And it's all a PR war here of getting getting your truth out there louder than the lies that are against it.
Well, that's why it you need to have, you know, if something like this really worked and it was a free energy device, it needs to be swirling on the desk of Lou Dobbs with three, I know a Nobel Prize physicist who will verify and test this stuff. It needs to be verified by mainstream people, and then it needs to be there, and then the whole world sees it. And you know what? That's how big technological moves happen. They do not happen. You know, there are lots of wonderful things that get invented every day in all kinds of fields. Biotechnology, but if there's not a trajectory to get it out there and get it known, it simply is going to wither on the vine. And I think this is what people have to understand. It you know, every inventor thinks, I'm going to build a better mousetrap, the world will be a path to my door. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Greer, we're coming up to the last minute of the show here. So if you could give your website once again and a way for any of the inventors that listen to my program to be able to contact you and say, hey, let's talk business here and get this project protected.
Great. Yeah, well, the energy site is SEASPower, SEASPower.com, and the disclosure project is disclosureproject.org. And they can email me either at website, and my webmaster gets email too.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Well, thank you again for your time, and we may have you on a future show if we can find the time then.
All right.
Thanks again for joining me.